Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Griefsters, welcome if you are new to the show, and continued hellos if you've been here for some time. If you are new, there are lots of past episodes you might have missed, so feel free to scroll back amongst our past guests, including Sarah Pascoe, Robert Webb, Gemma Whelan, Susan McComa, David Baddiel, and many, many more, all available on the Acast website. And if you like the show or even an episode, please do rate and review us on iTunes. I know everybody asks you to do that. Sorry, it genuinely helps other people find the show. It means I can keep making them, so that's why everybody asks you to do that. We also have a live episode recording coming up this Saturday, the 15th of September 2018, if you're listening in the present time code. We'll be at King's Place at the London Podcast Festival with some incredible guests: Andrew Hunter-Murray from No Such Things a Fish, Erin Gibson from Throwing Shade, and stand-up Dane Baptiste. Head to the King's Place website for more information and tickets. And if you are coming to see the live record, we will be doing a sanitary item collection for the amazing charity Bloody Good Period. Bloody Good Period collect and distribute sanitary items to refugees and women on low incomes in London and Leeds. They're an amazing charity, and all you need to do is buy some sanitary items, bring them with you to the show. I know night pads are always welcome. For more information, head to bloodygoodperiod.com, and we'll be collecting them after the recording. This week's guest is animator and illustrator Gary Andrews. Gary has illustrated for Private Eye, Disney, I mean, guys, he's even directed Fireman Sam. He's also the creator of A Doodle A Day, where he documents his life as a widower. Gary came in to talk to me about his wife, Joy, who died of sepsis in 2017. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with animator and illustrator Gary Andrews. Hello.
Hello.
You've got your posh tea.
I have got my posh tea, my middle class green tea.
Middle class green tea. Would you consider yourself not middle class? Is that why?
I think I'm horrendously middle class.
Oh, I see.
My parents weren't. My parents were both from very poor backgrounds,
right.
and then sort of dad did okay, you know,
yeah.
And sort of they were self-made, and then they sent me to boarding school and things like that. So I think, I am middle class.
That's why you need to go for the peach tea. So you were just saying, you, as well as doing animation, illustration, you also do, what was the name of the cartoon in Private Eye?
The Sylvie Crin They're pastiche romantic fiction stories in Private Eye, and they've been going for over 30 years. And I've been doing those.
How did you first get that job?
Through an agent. I had an illustration agent at the time who sort of got me the gig. They were an agency that mostly did genuine romantic fiction for like Woman's Own and stuff, and I happened to be working for them. And they said, "Oh, there's these ones come up for Private Eye, and they want a bit of humour involved in it. And do you want to do it?" I went, "Yeah, great." A couple of weeks' worth of work, you know.
Oh my God!
30 plus. Yeah, I'm still doing them. You know, they used to be every issue. Now they're more sporadic, but they're.
Like, how has Private Eye changed? Have you seen it massively change?
Do you know, it's almost exactly the same as it was. The biggest change that they've made is when I first started, everything was on paper and they literally used to stick it all on the sheets with cow gum and go to the printer. And now, of course, it's all
digital.
But apart from that, it's
basically the same.
Pretty much the same.
It does have that, like, comforting feel about it, Private Eye, doesn't it?
It's an institution.
Like, I feel like I pick one up and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what it was like ten years ago.
It's literally unchanged. It's very sweet. My mum and dad both died like coming 30 years ago almost. And after dad died, I was going through his stuff, and without me knowing, he'd been buying every issue of the magazine, and he'd cut out my page and everything. He had this little clip full of all my pages, which was so sweet.
I love stuff like that. When you're like, oh, you kept that. Yeah. But now I have a child, I keep the weirdest things.
Oh, I've got big plastic boxes from factory shop full of shit.
To be fair, it's shit.
It's like, do you want to keep this? No, I think I will.
It's the act of putting something in the bin. That's what she made this Easter card, and I was like, well, she didn't, her childminder did. And I was like, oh, we don't need, I mean, it's a picture of a bunny that she drew.
Yeah.
I just couldn't put it in the bin.
I have to admit, once they start getting older, the recycling does actually happen a lot, rather
more. Okay, because there's more stuff, isn't there? You've accumulated more stuff.
I mean, mine are now 10 and 8. So if I'd been keeping all that stuff, I would be like one of those weird hoarders with a house that you couldn't get into. So.
And also, like, as we talk about in the show so much, for kids having to go through that, it's a bloody nightmare. Like, I mean, my husband had, his mum had kept like every single school book, everything, even like a maths book. He was like, you know, his English book had written all these stories, but he was like, "This mum, what's this?"
why have you kept that? Book. It's just
sums. She was really bad at throwing things away. So you mentioned your mum and dad there, but that's not, I think, who we're specifically remembering. No. So who are we remembering today?
We are here to remember my wife, Joy.
Joy. I love that name.
And as we'll probably discover, she was the most appropriately named person ever in the world. She died last October, the 27th, of sepsis.
So how many... my maths is so bad.
At this point in time, at the point of recording, that's about 9 months.
So she died 9 months ago?
Yeah.
Wow. So you hadn't even got through your first year, Gary?
No, not yet.
I mean, I'm sorry, you will.
But yeah, I will.
You were in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness me.
Yeah.
So she died of sepsis in October. So let's go back a bit. How did you meet Joy?
We met at a local amateur theatrical company. In fact, I first saw her when she was 15. Doing a sketch in one of their sort of Christmas party shows.
Oh,
and I was sitting up in the audience, and the sort of curtains opened, and this girl did this incredibly funny sketch. And I sort of turned next to the person I was sitting to and said, "Wow, she's good. She's really good. Who's that?" And they said, "That's Joy." Okay. She went off to university, and she was just, you know, one talented kid at the theatre. She's good. She'll be good one day. And then she disappeared, went to uni and all that sort of thing. I did some sort of life stuff. And then she came back from uni, and I was directing Midsummer Night's Dream. She was a whisker under 6 foot tall, so I cast her as Helena,
of course.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Painted maple, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I cast her as that, and she was hilarious, obviously, in that. But during the course of that, we became like really, really good friends. I mean, we just clicked. So we just found we had just like everything in common, which was amazing. And we just used to hang out a lot, and that's all I thought it would ever be. Never in a million years thought someone like her would be interested in someone like me in any other way other than sort of watching movies together and being mates. And then one day we were sitting on our sofa, and we sort of turned to each other to say something, and we looked into each other's eyes, and we described it later as our Stargate moment. We looked into each other's eyes, and it's literally like we fell into each other's soul. And it happened at the same time for both of us. It was one of these weird things. And then we were kissing, and then suddenly we were a couple. And from that moment, that was it. That was it. We knew we wanted to be together. So, and for 19 years we were,
wow,
which was amazing.
So then you get married and you have...
Married, had kids.
Two kids.
Had our own little business together, little company, sort of doing, you know, well, I'm full-time animator sort of mainly, but we also did like corporate videos and stuff together,
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah.
She was the editor and effects and all that sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
And ran all the admin side of the business, which we'll probably come on to later, because
yeah,
that's an interesting
side of it all.
Things to take into account in these circumstances. But
so you're a real team?
We're totally. And we and the thing is, worked from home, so we were together pretty much 24/7.
Wow. So then what happens in October of last year?
Well, I was... the day job at that point was I was directing Fireman Sam.
And that's a big deal. Fireman Sam's a big deal.
I had been for like the last sort of... I've been on the show for about 11 years or something. And... the animation was happening out in Vancouver. So we'd been away for a weekend in Glastonbury, had a lovely family weekend in Glastonbury, at a fairy festival, of course, because what else would it be in Glastonbury?
Of course.
And she'd driven me directly from there to Heathrow. And it's like, right, see you in a week. And off I went. And then when I contacted her the next day, did the old FaceTime thing like you do, and she was like, oh, I've got this horrible flu. And I was like, oh, you always get ill when I go away. She said, yeah, I know. It's oh, well, you know. Dose up, have your Lemsip.
Yeah.
I'll speak to you tomorrow. I spoke to her the next day, and she was saying, oh, I still feel really rough. She said, the grandma's got the kids for the day so I can have a rest. I've got the dog on my lap and I'm watching rubbish on the telly for the day. I said, all right, you know, just really look after yourself.
Yeah.
So the next day I sort of texted to say, you're up for a FaceTime. And I got a reply back saying, this is Lily, mummy's... I got a text from her saying, can you talk to Lily? So I texted Lily and said, you know, is everything right? She said, mummy doesn't feel very well. Auntie Marie's here. That's her sister, Joy's sister. And they called the doctor. I went, oh, okay, fine, you know. And then I went out to lunch in Vancouver and I get a phone call saying, okay, they think she needs to go into the hospital. It might be some sort of an infection or something. Do you think there's any chance you can get an earlier flight back? Because this was the Thursday and I wasn't due back till the Monday.
Yeah.
So I said, right, I'll see what I can do. Started looking at the... opportunities for flights and stuff, started getting the ball rolling on that. And then I got another call saying, have you got that flight? Because it looks pretty serious. Do you think you can get back?
Jesus.
And I was thinking, oh, God, you know, what's this going to be? Is she going to have an operation? Is she going to be out of action for a couple of weeks? What, you know, blah. So I got the flight and, you know, it was the red eye, you know, sort of late night. I was sitting in Vancouver Airport at 10:30 listening to Wittertainment, you know, just to try and keep myself awake. And got on the flight, couldn't sleep. Playing all those scenarios in your head, you know, I wonder what the matter. And then when I landed at Heathrow, I was like, I'll go and get my coach. And then I saw Joy's mum and her eldest brother to meet me. I was like, oh, that's odd. Nice, but odd.
Yeah, why?
And they took me back to the car and then sat in the car. And then before we left, they sort of said, right, this is what's happened. And basically, she'd gone into the hospital. They couldn't work out what was going on. Every specialist in the place sort of descended on a try and work it out. They said, we think we're going to have to go in and see what's going on in here. So she was put under anaesthetic and they opened her up. They found a twisted fallopian and a dead ovary and stuff like that. I thought that might have been partly true. But then suddenly she just had multiple organ failure while she was under the thing and had died at sort of 3:15 in the morning. So I was just in the air at the time, I think. We'd sort of lost her. So that was kind of...
That must have been, I mean, obviously, what a stupid thing to say, but it must have been such a shock. Like, did your brain kind of go, I can't really process what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, when I was on that flight, you know, you process every scenario. And that was, you know, one of the scenarios I'd processed was, I want, you know, what if?
What
and then
if?
You go, well, you know.
Don't be silly. You're just scaring yourself. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, there is that enormity of, like, literally, if I'd been standing up, I wouldn't have been able to, you know, I mean, the legs wouldn't work. It was one of those things. You hear the words and for the first few minutes, you're going... Hang on, what? In fact, I remember that initially, you go, okay, right, fine.
Yeah, your body's so numb, isn't it?
You go, yeah,
sure,
we've got
okay.
And then the tears start, and then the shaking starts. And
okay,
then
they've died, right,
yeah.
And then, your brain's like, hang on, you haven't really
heard
what
they
just told you.
Let's just say those words again. So they had managed to keep it from the kids.
Wow.
Because with the time difference and stuff, this is now, by the time I got home, it was mid-afternoon. So they'd had... a rock climbing day booked with them and their little cousins and stuff.
God.
So they had managed to...
So they were waiting for you to get back, you see. Oh, my God, that's so wise, I think, because you
it
wouldn't
was,
want to
I
not
think,
have your
I
dad
mean,
there.
Because I was so glad it was me that got to tell them dad, and that's, you know what I mean. But
no,
that
of course,
is the word.
Of course, you just want, you don't want them to.
They knew Mummy was in
help.
Hospital because they'd seen her taken away, and they knew she was in hospital. So I took them out to the garden because I wanted to be out in nature, and I told them I didn't want to be sitting in the house. Yeah. I wanted to be sat in the garden, so I took them out in the garden and sat down and said, right. And this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. Can you know?
Imagine.
I mean, Ben was only 7 at the time. Lily was just 10.
Fuck.
And I said, okay, so you know Mummy got taken into hospital last night because she was really, really poorly, you know, like, yeah. And I said, well, the doctors worked ever so hard to try and make her better and stuff, but I'm afraid it got a lot worse and they couldn't help her and Mummy's died. And I actually had to, from the first moment, I thought, I'm going to use the D word.
Good,
I'm not going to say, Mummy's sleeping, gone Mummy's away, gone to heaven, all that bullshit. I said, no, and Mummy's died, you know. There was that moment of silence, and then was literally like the sound of wounded animals, you know, that primal, primal sound. And we just sort of held each other tight and had a nice little cry for a few minutes and stuff. And then they did that incredible kid thing. It was like they're crying. I want to go back inside now. What's for tea? You know, and you're like,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. We have to eat, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was the pattern that then set now for the next few months in a way. And you know, obviously, for the first few nights, they didn't want to be anywhere except in my bed, you know, with me, which was fine, except for the fact that it was like sleeping with a sort of an insane starfish and the duvet thief.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like between the two of them, I was either getting kicked in the nuts or freezing cold because she'd got all the duvet.
I moved into my mum's bedroom after my dad died for about... I think I was there for about 8 months.
Yeah.
And both of us can't remember when I did it. I was just there. And then one day we'd been clearing out the shed and there'd been a lot of mice in the shed and I'd got really freaked out. And she'd been like, oh, don't be stupid. You know, it's fine. Anyway, we'd gone to bed and I'd obviously had a lot of nightmares about the mice.
Yeah.
And I spent the night like trying to brush mice off me. And I woke up in the morning and she was sat there with a cup of tea looking at me. She went, if you do one more night like that, you're going back in your room. And she still calls it like Night of the Mice. She was like, you're bloody moving and twitching. Oh. I couldn't sleep. And I think she tried several times to be like, Carrot, like, you know, wake up, you obviously... And I just didn't wake up.
No.
I had
about a week solid of both of them in there, at the end of which I was like, guys, this is so hard. It's not a giant bed. It's only a normal double. It's not a king size. You're going to have to start going back in your own rooms, guys. Do you want us to do it in shifts? Take it in turns to start with. So they did. They took it in turns to sleep in with me. So it wasn't quite... It was either getting kicked or having the duvet stolen rather than both.
At least you know what you're... Okay, tonight is this.
Yeah, tonight I wear a cricket box. You know, it was that sort of thing. But and then eventually it was like, okay, time to go back to your own rooms, guys. And we're only talking, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, I think, before they were back in their room. But I said, listen... It's the bed is here.
Yeah.
If you wake up and you need me, just come in.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, that goes on for as long as you like. Just don't bring the boyfriend away. You know, when you get old enough, or you know, it's literally like, you know, the bed is always there if you need it. And actually, in I think the last 6 months, I've managed to be flying solo, which is kind of nice. So
yeah,
they've settled into being okay.
And it's handy,
with
I guess,
it.
For your mental health as well to have sleep.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have slept like a log ever since. I've had no bad dreams about it. I've had no, you know, sleep has been, although not a lot of it, because I'm a bit of a lark and an owl. I'm one of these people that just doesn't sleep much anyway.
Yeah.
Even less since this. I think I've done that thing of going to bed really late. Mm. You're sitting there watching telly. Oh, just one more program. One more glass of whiskey.
Me and Mike, after my dad died, I remember one time it was like 1 a.m. and all the lights were on and me and my mum were like chatting, we had some music on. I was like, what? This? And I had this memory of like, it didn't used to be like this, but it's like the rules are off.
Well, the rules have changed, haven't they? I mean, that's the thing. And it's the same with daily life. All the rules changed instantly. Your life became a different life.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I said that, I remember saying that to the kids. It was like, okay, this was like probably the next day.
Yeah.
I think I said to them, it was Mummy and Daddy and you two. And we were Mummy and Daddy and you were the children. And that's how it was, you know. I said, Mummy's gone. It's just me. We need to be a team now. We can't be me against you. We've got to work together. We've got to be Team Andrews. We've got to do this together. I'm going to try and do everything that mummy did as well as what I did. I'm going to get stuff wrong. Yeah. Tell me when I get things wrong. Tell me when I get things right. Just keep me posted. You know, we got to do this together.
And how has it been as a dad? Because my experience is obviously losing my dad.
Yeah.
So, and I had a friend who, the mum died, and my mum used to say, oh, God, you must be so hot, because, you know, they're definitely from that generation where these mums were doing everything, which is not always the case now. But as a dad, losing that female energy or the mother figure, whatever you want to, how has that been?
It's been I hate the word, it's been interesting. I mean, I have been able to step back from myself and look at it, and, you know, sort of outside of me sometimes. Yeah, it's been, I've been very lucky in that my job has meant I've mostly worked from home.
Yeah, that's handy,
which means I've been around a lot.
Yeah,
so I've seen how it works. I mean, although we were very 21st century, and I feel I'm a very, you know, modern thinking bloke, we did have the sort of relationship, although we worked together, we very early on the decision was, look, my job is by far the bigger income. When we had kids, we made the decision that she was going to stop work basically and look after the kids. And same with cooking and everything. I mean, it's just because she was better at it. I mean, to be honest, if I'd been doing the cooking, we'd have all, you know.
Well, same. That's why my husband does it.
You go. But she was brilliant, you know. And it's like, so it was almost like a weird old-fashioned relationship in that she did all the mum stuff, and I was like the dad. Except I was there, so I could stop for lunch. I could be there, and I could do the school run if she was busy at something and all that sort of thing. So I'd been around. But nevertheless, I hadn't cooked a meal for 20 years nearly, and things like that. So it was a very fast learning curve, because you had to suddenly, take on board all that stuff. And I mean, I've always been a bit, you know, I'm an arty bloke anyways. So I was quite happy to, you know, do her hair for her. I mean, she's brilliant at hair anyway. She does her own. And my son's got long hair, so she does his hair in the morning before school, you know, things like that. But I was happy to do that. Occasionally a little party, she wanted to wear a bit of makeup and stuff like this. I'd help her put the little bits of makeup on. Now she's really good at that. I mean, she's only 10, but she's really good at makeup. Only a little. She doesn't look like a slapper. I mean, she just is natural, you know. But I do draw the line. But things like that. And then, like the other day, she said to me, she came downstairs and she said, "Dad, I've got this tummy ache." I went, "Oh, darling, have you? What's the matter? Do you feel sick?" She went, "No, not really." She said, "Where is it?" She said, "Across here." And I was like, "How long has that been?" She went, "About 4 or 5 days, but it's not hurting." I'm like, "Right, okay." So in the morning, I said, "Right, Lily, I've got this little purse for you now, and in there, you've got a spare pair of pants and you've got one of these pads." I kept all Joy's, like, you know, pads and things just in case, you know, visitors got caught short or whatever.
Yeah.
So I said, "So you've got this in your school bag in case," and she knew all about periods and stuff anyway. So I said, "Just in case," she hasn't yet, but I think it might have been an early warning or something. So, and it was good. I was comfortable enough to do that because, you know, we've always been very open, but suddenly being confronted with having to do that was an interesting...
Yeah, because I suppose if Joy was around, you perhaps wouldn't have that conversation. You might be supportive, you know, but
It wouldn't have been, "Go talk to your mother, I don't want to."
No.
It would have been, "Oh, let's all sit down and talk about it." And but yeah, suddenly having to go, "Right, okay, now I know those are in that drawer. And you've got a little spare purse, darling, right? Okay, here we go." But it's nice that, and she can talk to me about that stuff
that's
as
amazing.
Well. And I just hope that continues. I hope that as she gets a teenager, she doesn't get any more embarrassed by me than she already is. I mean, I do it deliberately sometimes, dancing in public, you know, dad dancing at the playground. "Dad, what are you laughing at?" And that's a dad's job, I think, to embarrass your children.
My dad did try and get that through to me, but
it's a very, very important part of the process.
I was a bit confused why he was so insistent on doing it. Wow, so that's incredible that you've been, I guess it's so interesting, isn't it? Because, again, interesting, but like, it is so reflective of what the relationship is before the death.
Yes.
So I think that's when what a death does, it kind of like sort of refracts and bounces everything back. So if it is an open family beforehand, like it, that does help for when that person is dead to be like, okay, I'm not having to like, I have no idea what happens at the home or anything, like what your job is.
Exactly. And I mean, in all the things that really matter, I think it really was like that. And we've you know, day to day, been able to struggle through. I think the things that are the biggest mystery to me were things like, what the hell does this do when you open a drawer in the kitchen and there's this, you know, cupboards full of these strange implements. You go, I have no idea what this is for. That's either going to go in the recycling or up into a very high cupboard.
And do you have that? I mean, I used to have this with my dad all the time, the frustration of just like, I just want to ask them, like, you know, because you almost go to say, what?
The amount of times and the other thing I find with it, and this is universal, is like, you'd be sitting there, and something happens, you go, "Oh, I must tell Joy about that when she gets in." And you go, yeah, that's not going to happen, is it? You know, yeah. Or I can't wait to show the joy of this when I get home. Or just watching a program that you used to watch together, yeah. and you used to just turn to them and go, huh, and they're not there to do that too. That's been the sort of almost the hardest.
Yeah.
And in fact, the hardest thing I've found is when you're having a really good day,
mm-hmm.
and you're having a laugh and you're having fun,
yeah.
and then you go, fuck, I'm having fun.
Mm.
And then you feel really guilty, and then you're crying on the sofa on your own at 1 a.m, going, damn, I had fun. And I know it's fine, and I know they'd be fine with me doing it, but it doesn't stop the fact that I wanted to be having fun with her,
yeah.
and she's not there to be having the fun. And those are the things, they're almost harder than the tough moments when you're having a really rough day.
Yeah.
You cope with that on your own, you go, right, I can do this.
Yeah.
It's the good stuff that almost makes you feel worse.
It almost burns, doesn't it? That's what I used to feel like. Because the bad stuff is like, and again, it's expected. You're expecting it. Society's expecting it. Your friends are expecting
yeah.
it. So when you're sad, I was like, yes, you're sad. Well done, you're doing sad. But when you're like, oh, you're laughing or having fun or something,
yeah.
or something being normal, and then you're like, oh, I didn't prepare myself for this.
And that started happening really soon. I mean,
of
within
course,
two, you know,
yeah.
within days. I had this brilliant experience. We'd had... so on the day she died, I had a couple of friends come around that evening, and the family were around and all that sort of thing, which was to be expected. My friends at the theatre, the guy runs the chairman of the theatre, phoned me up and said, do you want to throw the theatre open tomorrow night at the bar so people can get together, have a couple of drinks? And I went, yeah, that would be great. Thinking, you know, about 20 or 30 of us would get together and just have a drink and go, what the fuck? And about 200 people passed
Aww.
Through in the course of the evening. It was extraordinary. There's this huge wave of love. And I remember a few of them saying to me, we thought it was really weird at first that you were going to do that. And then when we came along, we were like, oh, no, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And we were laughing there as well and crying. But it was the Monday night. So she died on the Friday morning. So it's the Monday night. So, it was, you know, a couple of my friends came around who were really good friends of ours, but he'd been shift working, so he hadn't had a chance to come and see us. And they walked through the door and he gave me a hug. And you know that thing when people give you a hug after they go, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
There are no words, which again we'll come on to. He gave me a hug and just started laughing. He just laughed and laughed. He went, I'm so sorry. He said, I don't know what else to do. He said, it's ridiculous, isn't it? And I started laughing too. And I was like, yeah, it is. And we were in hysterics in my hall,
yeah.
just laughing at just how stupid this was. You know. And then about an hour later, I was in floods of tears on their shoulders. But
yeah,
it was kind of,
the laughter
was brilliant.
Yeah, and I think people don't realise, like, what you're dealing with is just emotion. And it sometimes
yeah.
comes out in tears, and sometimes laugh, and sometimes a big old shout. Because
yeah. oh, that too.
Your
yeah.
body is just, like, filled with this thing of like, what the fuck, I feel this massive thing that it isn't sadness, happiness, anger, it's none of these things, it's
no.
just this
it's
emotion.
Just raw emotion
yeah.
coming out in every single possible
so, yeah,
way. I remember
so
the one
much.
Of the kids being asleep upstairs and me just wanting to scream, so literally burying
yeah.
my face in the sofa in all the cushions
oh,
and
God.
Screaming at the top of my lungs into the cushions so I wouldn't wake them up.
Oh, that's the worst, isn't it?
And punching the sofa
yeah.
for 5 minutes, just going
yeah.
this is fucking ridiculous, you know, and just literally just punching the sofa until my hands were sore.
But you have to get it out.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing you
well,
can do.
Well, then you felt better. Then I sat down and watched something funny, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
And feel good about yourself.
And I think the danger is feeling, if you feel guilty about that feeling and you try and think, oh, I mustn't do that, that's so damaging. The more you can go,
yeah.
my mum used to get a big stick and go and take the dog for a walk.
Brilliant.
and then just beat
hit,
the stick
hit,
up on like
trees and
a tree,
things. Yeah.
a bit of stump.
Fantastic.
And she said,
Fantastic.
You know, just used to make her, she was like, I just had to do it. And I was like, yeah, God, I the amount of cushions I still punch.
Yeah, yeah.
Bit
well,
of paper, rip up a bit of paper
yeah,
really
anything.
Fast.
Whoa.
That was quite good.
I watched Ben. It was about 2 or 3 nights later, I think. You know, he'd been quite, after the initial reaction, he's a very funny little boy, very funny little boy, very quirky. And he'd been really kind of just him for about, you know, 2 or 3 days, I suppose. And I was thinking, this is, you know, he's in denial. And then suddenly one evening... on the sofa, he just went and he did the thrashing, punching,
Whoa.
Screaming thing on the sofa, and it was like, yes,
yeah, get it
there
out.
There he goes, and it was almost like seeing him do that. And I think it allowed me to do it
yeah,
a bit, like, you know,
yeah.
but it was so again, it was that word again, primal. It was just, it was brilliant to see because it was like, yes, there's a big valve being let off on that pressure
yeah.
cooker of emotions, and
I think
and they do since they've got little
yeah.
bits. They've been incredibly. Sort of dignified and controlled and whatever about the whole thing, not in denial because we talk about it all the time.
Mm.
They're very comfortable about talking to her in the past tense, but accepting. But then occasionally we'll just say, you know, oh, I wish mummy was still here. You know, Ben said to me the other day, I wish she was still here. Can't we pretend she's in the hospital still? You know, and you go, oh my God.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I said, well, we could, darling, but we know it's not true, don't we? And he's like, yeah, I know. Yeah. Nah, anyway. And off he goes being a fish or something for a bit, you know. And you go, well, you said it. You needed to say it.
Yeah.
We know you feel it.
And I didn't say, don't say it. Let you say it. And absolutely. I didn't laugh. And I went, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you're creating that atmosphere where, like, if you want to talk, you can.
My daughter, she's 10 going on about 27. She's very mature. And she's a real nurturing, caring, you know, child with little kids and all that sort of thing. So she's very grown up in a lot of ways. So she's been very controlled. But every now and then, she's always been a thinker. Mm. So even before Joy died, she'd come down suddenly and going, I'm just worried about, you know, what happens after, or why do people have to die, and all this sort of thing. And we'd say, well, it happens. It's the one inevitability in life, darling. Yeah. But don't worry, we're not going anywhere for ages. It's no one's planning anything like that. And then, of course, mummy goes and dies. And you go, thanks, universe, for that one. Cheers.
Yeah.
And so after that, when she's had, you know, two or three of those since. And I go, well, it still holds true what we said. It just so happens we were one of the unlucky ones.
Yeah.
Mummy was the unlucky one. We've had a horrible thing happen to us. What I said still stands. No one's planning it. It's unlikely, blah, blah, blah. And she said to me the other day, I sometimes think, what's the point of it? What's the point of life if people are just going to die anyway? And you think, well,
I mean, she's right. That is a big question to ask that a lot of us do think.
And I said to her, well, think about, since mummy died, about how many people have said how lovely she was and how many lives she touched and how many people go, wow, you know, our lives are better for having known mummy. And the amount of people who, after she died, changed the way they were living because it was like a wake-up call. And they went, why am I doing this? I'm going to do that. And it literally touched people's lives in that big way. And I said, think about how that's happened. Mm. I said, that's the point. You live your life trying to be that person, trying to touch other people and make their lives better. If you can do that, that's the point of life. And she was like, yeah, what are you watching? And I'm like, I'm watching this, darling. Can I watch it? No, because there's shouty, sweary grown-up things in it. Can you go to bed now? Okay, no. And off she goes. And, you know, she just needs little things put in place in her head, you know. So I've never talked down. I don't believe in talking down to them. You just go, this is it, straight. What happens after you die, Daddy? Well, nobody knows, darling.
Yeah.
Christians believe this, Muslims believe this, atheists believe this. And we go through the whole thing about what different people believe. And what do you believe? I believe this, blah, blah, blah. She goes, yeah, okay, all right. I said, you believe what one of those you want to believe? She goes, yeah, okay. And she had a little thing. I like the one that you like. Well, good. That's handy.
Because
that makes life easier. And you know.
You sound like a really good dad, Gary. I'm a pretty good judge because, like, I've been pretty obsessed with dad since I was 15. You sound like a pretty good dad to me.
I hope so. Really, I mean, I just following my instincts, hoping for the best. You know,
it must be so hard. I mean, I know everyone
still
says
shout
to
them.
You. Yeah, of course.
They still drive me nuts.
Yeah, but that's a good dad.
You know,
like, oh my God. I mean, my mum will listen, but don't listen to this bit.
Shh.
Occasionally, I need
go
to
make
shout-
a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Go and make a cup of tea, mum.
Occasionally, I needed shouting at, and you know, occasionally I didn't. My dad was a big shouter, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that side of it. You know, of like being. I find that really frustrating when people like. I mean, obviously, don't shout at them for no reason. But like, my dad was a big shouter, and it did equip me quite well for real life.
Yeah.
Because when people shout, I'm like, sure, bring it, whatever you got. Like, it's fine. Like, I understand people sometimes shout, and it's not a big deal. Whereas I have friends who are like, they shouted, and I'm like, that was nothing. You've just seen my dad shout.
Yeah. I've got a pretty big shout when I need to.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I don't try to use it too often, but occasionally, if they're just not listening, I let rip. And it does literally make them stop in their tracks and they go, okay, he means it now. Because they do push. I think they push. And obviously, as it is just me now, you know, they outnumber me now. So there can be times when they're like going, let's just push a bit more. Guys, can you stop now, please? Guys, seriously, stop. I'm asking you nicely. This is the last time I'm asking nicely, guys. Can you stop? Blah, 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 blah. Bang!
Yeah.
Oh, okay, you meant it. You know, and...
And it's hard as well because you're grieving, you know, and part of grief is anger.
And sometimes, they're doing a thing and I'm going, guys, don't take the piss just because mummy's died, you know, don't think you can use that against me. And I've said those words to them, you know, don't, you know, let's not, you know, do that. And sometimes you go, God, did I just say that to
them? I think that's fair enough.
But actually, I think it kind of shocks them into going,
yeah,
we got a point.
You know, like it's just me here. Remember that.
Yeah, I've literally said, this is just me now, guys. I can't do this. Yeah. I cannot. I've got no one to turn to, guys. You have to just stop now.
Yeah, you've got to give me a break.
And you know, you do get close to that breaking point sometimes when they're just being total assholes. You know? And kids do. Trust me, you've got that delight
to come. I know. Well, already,
you're still in
there.
The honeymoon period.
I don't know, mate. I don't know. I think we might be out of it, but she hit me on the head yesterday with the absolute look of joy in her face, like got a little pink spade, which I said, don't hit mummy. And with absolute joy, whacked me on the head and laughed and looked at me like, and I did. Yeah. I was like, right, okay, here we are. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome to motherhood. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's, you know, when you lose a parent at a young age, I mean, obviously their young guy was 15, you know, and everyone says like, oh, you lose your childhood, you grow up fast. But it's like, you do in a way, you do have grown up fast because death has become very, very close to you.
Yeah.
And so I can understand, there's no point bullshitting these kids. Like, there's no point, they fucking know people die.
Exactly. And this, in fact, this was part of the conversation I had with Lily the other night. I was saying to her, it's different for your friends.
Yeah.
I said, they only know death from films, playground games, you know. They hear about other people's grannies or whatever, or a pet. I said, for you, it's happened really close to home, darling. So you have a perspective on this that all your other friends don't have. So I can understand why you're thinking about it, blah, blah. So again, and I'm having this conversation thinking, you're 10. We're having this conversation like you're,
know.
You know.
But it's like, that's how it is. And so you need to, have they had counselling or anything?
No, it was offered to me. The school were amazing. Mm. The school were absolutely, and that was the other thing. The school, she died on the last Friday of half term.
Wow.
And, you know, the school were in touch and said, take what you need, take the time you need, blah, 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 like that. And the kids on Sunday night go, are we going to school tomorrow for the Monday? I'm going, guys, really? You know?
But you want normality.
And they go, can we go to school? I said, tell you what, you're going to go to school on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to give the school a chance to tell their friends without them being there.
Yeah,
So they had one day without them there so their friends could be told, look, Lily and Ben's mummy's died, blah, blah, blah. And then they went in on the Tuesday and they were great. And the school said to me, you know, there's counselling if you want it. There's counselling for me if I want it, for them if they want it. I said, let's see how we go.
Yeah.
And so far we haven't because we talk.
Yeah.
And I think because we've talked openly with each other, I know there's a big school of thought. In fact, I heard on one of your other podcasts a while back that lady talking about, you know, kids cover it and they say they're brilliant and they're not and they need the help. And I was listening to that one thinking, Jesus, is she right? Am I wrong? Am I doing the wrong thing? But of course, everyone's different, I think, and everyone's got their thing. And I think I know them. And I'm looking at them and I'm keeping an eye on it. And if it looks like there's anything, I will ring the alarm bells. But
I think it's time as well, like, you guys are really, you know, this is fresh.
Yeah.
This is still fresh.
Yeah.
Like, the first year is a real,
yeah.
You know, like I always say this, the first year of a baby, right? You look back and you're like, oh, God, I can't remember what happened. That was mad.
Yep.
First year of a death, you're like.
Yeah, we're hitting all those anniversaries.
Yeah. And the anniversary is a huge thing. And then
you've got a birthday next Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. All of that stuff is, you've got to do the birthday, the Christmas, all the kids' birthdays, your birthday. You've got to tick those things. You've done them. And once you've done them all once, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
We
got to go through. It will still be hard, but we have that memory of we did it once. And I think also, I mean, I didn't have counselling, but I was 15. It was a bit awkward. And like I said, everyone's different. The thing I found interesting, having spoken to people like Shelley Gilbert from Grief Encounter and Julia Samuels from Child Bereavement, there wasn't anything when I was around. There wasn't.
No.
But when they're telling me about like these weekends that they take kids off and being, I think what I would have appreciated, being around other kids. Because I had that same thing. My friends didn't quite get it.
Mm-hmm.
And they say like they take them away for a weekend and it's kids that have lost mums, dads, brothers and sisters. And, you know, they're all in together and they make a film or they go kayaking. But you're with someone and you go, oh, okay, I'm not weird.
Mm.
Okay. And that's the big thing I think is just very powerful.
Yeah.
As you must have had, linking with other people of like, oh, okay, other people have lost their wife. Like, okay, they know her. And I think that's a massive thing as kids. You just, because if you're the only one in the school, I mean, I was quite lucky at my secondary school. There was a couple of girls had lost dads and one girl, Hannah, was a good friend. And so she lost her dad when she was eight and she literally was like, hey,
welcome to the club.
Yeah,
the famous club.
I felt very like I did have I didn't feel completely strange. But then definitely when I got to uni and I'd be talking to people with all these parents and I was like, God, am I the only one this happened to?
This is kind of what I'm waiting for. I think, and I've always thought, as they get older, they're going to start feeling. In fact, again, I said that to Lily the other night. I said, as you get older, you're going to feel this probably more, you know.
You feel, but that's you have to grieve for them at each stage. So, like, currently she's grieving as a 10-year-old. Yeah. And when she's 15, she's a different person. So she's going to have to grieve again. That's what I've realised. I've had to spend my life going, now I grieve as a mother, now I grieve as this.
I'm waiting for those moments when I can say, okay, I can see there's something going on here. Right, okay, do you want to talk to somebody other than me? You know, so I'm kind of leaving that door very much open. As yet, we haven't felt the need.
I think it's really early.
And I think it's probably early.
And my friend is a grief counsellor and she said to me as well, like, they advise waiting, something like she said, they advise waiting 6 months before you talk to anyone because you're just in shock. So she was like, you actually really can't process anything. Mm. And once you come through a bit of the shock, then you might be able to start saying, oh, okay, what happened to me?
I said to myself, I said, let's give it a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see how we're doing. And if at that point we still feel we need something, then we'll talk to somebody, you know.
Obviously this is only my experience. Like, the only thing I'm only saying this to you. This isn't even a podcast. This is me saying, someone else's parent. I swore blind I didn't. I was like, no, don't need it. And I was wishing someone would make me.
Yeah.
And I can't explain to you why.
I've had a couple of friends say that. And they're probably right.
That was a bit older. Like, I definitely was a bit older. But my mum tried to take me. And I was like, no, don't need it. I'm absolutely fine. And I was thinking, I hope she makes me go in that room. And she went, are you sure? And I went, yeah. She went, okay. And I thought, why isn't she making me go in the room? I just couldn't. I don't know what it was. I couldn't bring myself. It felt too vulnerable, I think, to say I need help. So I wanted to act like, if you're going to make me, I don't want to. So who knows? But
moment, you know, if you start seeing behavioural changes and signs and stuff like that, you know, I guess that's the thing. But I mean, I don't know, they're very kids are very good at hiding stuff, as they say.
So I gave no behavioural change. My brother did. So you just never know. But also, I guess what I'm saying is, like, it doesn't have to be because they need it. It could just be, like, that's what I have found later on in life. It wasn't because I needed it. It was just because, like, it's quite nice just to talk about it. Like,
gives them a chance, yeah.
Yeah.
As I say, I think, because it happened when it did, at the time of year it did. I think, I was going to get that first year over.
Sounds like I'm pressing you into it.
No, not at all. No. It's confirming in a way what I've always thought in my head. Let's go through all those anniversaries.
Yeah,
let's
definitely
see where we feel. The offer is open.
Yeah.
And then say, you know what? It's been a year. Why don't we talk to somebody about how it's been?
Yeah, that's a lovely idea.
And let's do that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So you do these things called, well, tell us, what are they? They're Doodle Day.
I call it Doodle Day. I started it on my 55th birthday.
Right. So is this before Joy died?
Yes, this was about a year and a half before she died.
Okay, cool.
I started doing them just because with my work, I mean, I still draw every day, but for the last, 10 years, it's all been digital drawing. I draw on a tablet with a pen on basically electric paper, So I'm still making marks, but it's all screen and it's a smooth pen. And I was missing that scratch of pen on paper. And so I set myself a task of every night before bed, I do a little drawing about something that happened that day. I go straight in with a pen, no pre-drawing, straight on the piece of paper, just sketch it in, try not to take any more than about 15 minutes and just make a little comment and treat it like a little diary, but also a nice little memory thing. And so I was doing that daily, every day.
And were you tweeting them
in? It was mostly just Facebook at that point.
Right.
And it was really just for me and for my friends.
Yeah.
And I did a couple, and I did one during that first year, the day Peter Salis died. I did a picture of Gromit standing by the thing saying, "No more cheese, Gromit," it said, and it had, Wallace and a little thing. And that went like 71,000 shares or something. It went absolutely viral. And it was like, whoa. And suddenly I started getting all these requests on Facebook. So I switched all my priorities and made everything private except that one album that I made public so people could follow and all that sort of thing. I was like, that was my first introduction to what social media could do. I was like, Jesus. But apart from that, the drawings were mostly just for my mates and for me and blah, 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 blah. And then the night I was flying back, because I was on the plane, I didn't do a drawing that night. And that's the only night I haven't done a drawing.
Wow.
It was the night I was on that plane flying back overnight. But the day she died, it was time to go to bed. And I suddenly thought, doodle, I haven't done my doodle. And then I thought, I can't do doodle, but I can't. Because she used to look at it, I'd sit there on the sofa, draw it, then I'd show it to her, we'd have a laugh, and then we'd go to bed or something. I thought, I can't think. So I just drew a broken heart. Because it took me 2 minutes and I couldn't think of anything else.
Yeah.
I was too numb, And then the next day, nighttime came and I thought, I have to do it. I need to draw something. So that was the day, I think that was the day I drew a back view of me and the two kids sitting there with a star above us and just saying, "Now we're three," or something like that. And I suddenly realised that doing these things was like opening those little pressure cooker valves on me.
Yeah.
And it was just getting that little bit out and making me process my day. In the same way I'd always process my day, what happened today that was funny?
Yeah,
or what happened in the world that annoyed me or whatever. And I did, but this became, what happened? How do I feel today? What has happened that's defining my new life today? So I did these little drawings, and again, it was for me, and also my friends, letting them know how I was doing.
Yeah,
because they've been amazing. And it was either just after or just before that I'd started putting them on Twitter anyway, because I suddenly thought, why aren't I putting these on Twitter? I've got a Twitter account, and I don't use it. So I'd started putting them on there, and Instagram and stuff like that, and. So they started going out there, and then, I noticed the numbers creeping. I had like 600 followers or something, and then it went up to like 650. I thought, oh, that's quite cool. And then a couple of months into it, or whatever it was, I've lost track of when the timing was now, the Press Association got, once someone who worked for that saw it and said, "Do you mind if we do a story on this?" And I was like, okay.
Yeah,
fine.
Sure.
They said, there'll be, a payment or whatever. I said, right, well, if there is, can you make that out to the Sepsis Trust, please? And I don't want any money, just pay them, sort of thing. And they went, okay. And they came back to me and said, the Daily Mail want to run it. And I went, no. why would I want them to do it? Thank you very much. Because, being a sort of middle class, lefty, snowflakey, whatever I am, I don't know what I am. and they went, we understand that. Can we just stop you there? And they showed me their record on their campaigning for sepsis and stuff, which this kind of weird double thing with them that politically that you want to go, what? But then sometimes they get a bee in their bonnet about a thing and you go, actually, I can see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know what? To hell with it. Let's just go for
it. It will help the Sepsis Trust, yeah.
Yeah. I said, okay, they need to make a donation. And there was a little bit of backward and forwarding about how much that would be. And eventually it was the right amount. I thought, okay, now they're talking sense. So they made the donation to them.
So you're not just like somebody's, you're an illustrator, you work, you run private art, you know what the cost of those illustrations should
exactly.
be. So that's good. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, no, you
pay for
this,
them, mate.
You're not getting this for free, you guys.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, and there was this like huge 3-page thing turned up in the paper.
Wow.
And online and all that. And suddenly it went nuts. And from 600 followers, I've now got approaching 22,000, which is crazy, and sort of slightly does my head in from all over the world and from there. But the thing that's been incredible is I've had one troll, which was in the first couple of weeks, and he got jumped on by a load of people, and I just blocked and deleted. But everybody has just been so lovely, and
they are beautiful drawings.
Well, no, thank you.
Because I, again, as we talked about, whenever we talk about, you know, when I interviewed Rebecca Payton, who's done a show about grief, like, you know, people start talking to you about grief stuff. Yeah. So I had a lot of people say to me, oh, you've got to see this, the doodle man. And actually, Kaylee Llewellyn, who is a very good friend who's done the show, and she was like, oh, yeah, she's Welsh. Oh, she was texting me, oh, back, I'm bawling my eyes out. You've got to watch this. And so I was like, oh, okay. And again, obviously, I'm very like, oh, you know, I don't want to cry. What is it? What, you know, slightly preparing yourself.
Yeah.
And then I looked and I cried and I was like, oh my God, these are so... And I think there's something so honest about them. And the amazing thing, and also I have such respect, I can't draw a straight line. I'm awful. My mum's a really good artist and my uncle's an artist. So I get very, like, a bit like, so impressed by people who can draw. Because I can't do it. And this, the simplicity of a drawing, you know, I can do an hour podcast about someone's feelings, but like, in that one picture, Now We Are Three, is basically what that whole, you know, whole show is about. And they were really beautiful and really simple. And I guess that simplicity thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what, I mean, talking about art for a minute. That's what art is about, is what's the least number of marks you can use to make this picture work? Don't over embellish. Just what, how quick can I do it? What's the least number of marks I can do to make the picture come over? That's what makes drawing a drawing, I think. And I'm one of those annoying people who finds it easy. Drawing's easy. Yeah, I don't have to think about it. Yeah. I've been doing it since I could hold a pencil. So it's not a problem. The drawing bit isn't the problem. For me, it sometimes takes me longer to think what I'm going to draw than drawing it. You think, what happened today? And you're processing it. And I have sometimes sat there for half an hour thinking, what am I going to draw? And then suddenly something happens or it comes to you and you go, oh, of course. And then you do 5 minutes. But it's about distilling that thought and that moment and getting it out there. But it was... For me originally. I mean, I just did it for me. You know, it was just about to process my own feelings.
Are there days when you don't want to do it? Because I have days when I don't want to do this. There's definitely days when I'm like,
yeah, I can imagine.
Oh God, like
there's actually no. There's not a day when I don't want to do the drawing. I think because it's just who I am. It comes naturally. Drawing is something I would be doing anyway. So in terms of doing the drawing,
there are the pain.
Because. In fact, the painful ones are kind of easier because as I'm drawing it, it's releasing a bit of that pain.
Wow.
That's the thing that's been, that's why I kept doing it originally, because the act of drawing it out makes me confront it and release it, beat it, come to terms with that pain or whatever. So in terms of that, there's the hardest thing sometimes when you have one of those days when literally fuck all's happened and you go, nothing happened today.
What
can I draw?
Literally
nothing happened. And there was, before Joy died, there was like one doodle where it's just a picture of me looking straight at the viewer saying, so nothing happened today.
That's reality of grief, isn't it? Like some days are so mundane and normal and you feel fine and you just do your shopping, you come home, and then the next day there's this torrent of emotion you can't stand up and you think, what happened to yesterday?
Yeah, why couldn't we share it out a bit?
Exactly.
But then, I mean, and also the flip side of that is some days you have some just really funny stuff happen and you just go, oh, that was brilliant. When something funny happens, I note it down on my phone just in case I forget. Because sometimes you go, oh, that'll be my doodle tonight. And you get to the evening and go, oh, what was that thing
that
happened?
What did they say?
Bollocks, I can't remember. So I literally just write everything down when it happens. And in a way, secrets. If you've had a day which has been nothing's happened, I can look back at the bank and okay, that was a non-day specific thing that happened, which is relevant. Yes. I can use that today.
Yeah, of course.
And so I've got this little stock of ones that I can go back to, things that have actually happened. It just may not have been that day,
because
there are some days that are boring,
let's face it. But and how do you think that's helped your grief then? So you say it's like the valve and stuff, but do you feel like maybe it's helping you walk through this year?
I think I'm really lucky, I'm blessed, if you like, by the fact I have this ability to draw. It is a way for me to release, to channel, to get it out. And I think if I hadn't been able to draw those things right then, and also then people respond, you know, we understand how you're feeling. You're doing so great. Keep it going. Or, oh my God, that happened to me. That's making me feel better to know I'm not alone. You see those sort of messages and you go, wow, okay, this is touching other people. that's fantastic. Yeah. You know, I kind of not owe it to them, but I mean, the fact to let them know they're not alone, because people have let me know I'm not alone. The fact that other people can now look at them and go, I'm not alone, is amazing. So I'm lucky that I can do that. It's like, people say to me sometimes, you know, we British, we're so rubbish at talking about grief. You know, we don't know how to talk. I said, well, then just fucking talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, there are no words. Yes, there are words. The words are, it sucks. Let's talk about it. Yeah. You know, and it's a kind of way of doing that, but with drawings.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's so interesting because, I heard you talking on the radio about it, and it really... Yeah, I stopped in my kitchen because I was like, that's how I feel. Like what you were saying about you get this reaction from people. You know, I get the same as, you know, emails and tweets and Instagram DMs of, oh, I didn't know anyone else felt like that. I didn't know that was what grief was. I thought I was having a breakdown. And then I heard so-and-so say this. And and as I say at the end of every episode, like, you're not alone.
Yeah.
And for me, one of the biggest revelations, I think it was Julia Samuels, who said, you know, grief makes you feel isolated, like chemically in your brain. And I was like, what? Like, what are you... Because that's how I felt, so alone. And anything that punctures that isolation, which is why people say, talk about it. But now we have social media and we have podcasts and we can, you know, you can reach out to someone in another country.
This is the positive side of it, isn't it? The positive side of social media. Yes, you don't feel as alone. I do these things and I get, you know, umpty billion messages from people back saying, yeah, this is touching, this relates to us, blah, blah, blah. And you go, wow, there is this sort of, you know, community of people that are going through. And of course there are. It's bloody obvious there are. Because there's billions of us creatures crawling all over the planet. You know, 5 people a day are dying from sepsis in this country. And you go, Jesus, you know, this thing's huge and happened to me. It's happened to 4 other people today.
Yeah.
You know, and you just think, and that's just sepsis. That's not counting all the other people that horrible things have happened to.
Yeah.
So you go, of course there's lots of other people going through this. But when you're going through it, it feels like just you.
Yeah, because that's what grief does. It chemically makes you feel alone.
It chemically isolates, as you say, which is incredible. I've not really thought of it in those terms, but you're absolutely right. And to be able to find a way to punch through that and vent it, you know, I'm really lucky. I have this thing.
But also I think, is it interesting, is it, because I say that like, oh well, I just do podcast, didn't think, but it's like, but you, lots of people have that thing and they don't. The fact, I think that it's sometimes we don't credit ourselves enough, like you are lucky you can draw, but you chose to sit down and do those drawings.
Yeah, I guess.
And that's, I think that choice is a real primal survival act of like,
and I think it was absolutely,
I choose to say I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm not going to let this.
And I think you're right. I think survival act is a very interesting phrase. I think that's kind of what it feels like to me. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too deep away about this, but you know, drawing is so much part of who I am that to be able to do it through that, it's a way of surviving it.
Yeah.
There was a lass the other day who on Twitter, who she was 18 and her dad had, it had been a year since her dad died. She tweeted about getting through the year and she was proud of herself, sort of thing. And I just messaged her and answered her back saying, well done, you know, I lost my wife, I don't know you, but my daughter's going through this and looking at, I'm so proud of how she's coping with this and I'm sure your dad would be proud of you. And she'd mentioned I was thinking of writing a book and I said to her, do it. Write it for yourself if nobody else, but then if you can get it, you know, if it can get published, it's great. But she wanted to write one, you know, from a kid's perspective for other kids. I said, do it. Just do it. And as she's said that she's going to do it now, which is great. But I mean, anything you can do to express, dance it out, I don't know, garden it out, you know, whatever, find a thing that you love that use anything to help you.
I know, and actually Saint Julia Samuels, as I call her, like she was talking about that, it's just trying to express it in any way possible. Because some people, like, I mean, I am a talker, have been all my life.
Surely.
Yeah, my every school report, I was saying this the other day, every school report was like, she talks too much. And I'm like, well, haha, because it turns out you can make a career out of it. And
I had the same.
Yeah.
Do something else apart from cartoons.
Well, you know, you can make it. And that's the thing, like, if you can draw or you can talk or, like you said, punch a pillow, that's the thing, I think it's so hard to express what that emotion is, because it's not a named emotion that happens to you when someone dies. It isn't anger, sadness, happy. It's everything in one.
It's all the emotions.
It's all of them. Yeah, it's all at once. It's like hearing every single TV channel at the same time. Yeah. And any way you can do to, like, I think that's what creation is, isn't it? It's like you just grab one bit, and then if you're speaking about it or putting that on the page, you're expressing the sadness today. That's what I'm there. And somehow you're able to separate all the emotion in your head, because otherwise it's so noisy, isn't it? It's just And which is why you stay up late and watch telly.
Yeah.
Because you just want silence.
You also need to just stop all those voices in your head. So, I mean, I literally, when I'm not doing another thing, I'm thinking about her all the time, 24/7. If I wasn't doing other things, that's all I would be thinking about is everything that's happened. Everything happened before. The nice stuff as well, but your head is just full of it.
Yeah, and definitely that's why you do see people going into slightly mindless state. Because I remember, like, I've told this story before, but, like, I started watching soap operas obsessively. So I would, like, we already watched a few, but I'd watch Neighbours, Home and Away, Emmerdale, Carnation Street, you know, EastEnders, then the next EastEnders, Carnation Street. My mum came in while I'd start watching Emmerdale, which we'd never watched. And that was a big turning point because she was like,
What are you doing?
Yeah, she's like, are you watching Emmerdale? And I was like, yeah, I've just got into it. And so this pub, and she was like, she just gave me a look of like, fucking hell. And I thought, oh yeah, maybe it's this. But it is, I was trying to get away from the voices in my head, which were just screaming, what the fuck just happened? What the fuck just happened? And it must be similar for you in a way. I mean, mine was quick, but at least, you know, we had 2 months, which I always think is quick. But to just go away and come back in your life, literally get on the plane.
And I missed it. You know, that was the thing that I found quite...
Yeah, it must be awesome.
In fact, I've managed to miss all three of them. I mean, mum and dad and her.
Wow.
It was like, with dad, he had 2 years with dad. He had lung cancer and stuff. And we'd been there all day in the hospital. And mum said, I think I want to stay here tonight. I went, okay, I'll go home and get your stuff. And we were in the hospital in London. We lived in Crawley. So it was like, I've got an hour's drive each way. So I went to get her overnight things. And when I came back, he'd gone. And it was like, bollocks. So I went to see him and he was lying there nice and peaceful and stuff, and you got that moment of oh, is that it, you know, oh, that's all right then, you know, there's nothing to be scared of thing. That was the other big thing, that okay, there's nothing to be scared of. But so, and then with mum, she'd been in hospital having an operation. This was like 3 years later, I think, and she'd had this operation, she had a kidney out or something because she'd been struggling. And then I'd sat with her all night one night, and she was just, you know, sort of having it a bit rough, and I'd sat with her all night and I was so tired. I come to them, I said, mum, I've got to go home for just a couple of hours, have a little lie down. Your sister's going to be here in a minute, sort of thing. I'm just going to go and have a little sleep, then I'll come back and see you later, and then I've got a load of work I need to do. She's like, yeah. So I went home, and then the phone rang a bit later and my auntie going, your mum's died, sort of thing. I was like, oh,
I've talked about this so much because I was talking very recently on Robin Cliffhand's episode that I think, and again, I ain't got no qualifications, but so many times the parents wait for the kid to leave the room.
Yeah.
And I think before, when I was the child, I was like, well, that's bullshit. Why'd you do that? Now I'm a parent. I go, yeah, of course. Why would you want your child to see that?
Yeah.
So I've had this on this show repeatedly of a child being like, you know, and I was in the room the whole time and then I just left. And you're like, yeah, they didn't want you to be in the room.
Yeah.
They wanted to go and you not have to see that moment. And you can, now you're a parent, you're like, I can see that choice.
Just pop out for a bit, love.
Exactly. But it's, but to not be with joy
The difference with it with both was, with mum and dad, with both of them, the last thing I saw of them, they were a bit suffering. They were a bit, and so I went to see them and they were at peace
of
and
course,
I felt good.
Yeah.
With joy, the very last time I saw her was on a FaceTime. And although she was sitting there, you know, with the dog like that, she was smiling, she was laughing. Mm. The last thing we said to each other was, I love you. And then she died. So I never saw her after she died. I chose not to because the last memory I had of her was a positive one.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's gone through my head a few times, should I have, shouldn't I have done? And I think I was right.
Yeah, you can only do what's right in the moment. Yeah.
And it was like, no, I wanted that positive memory.
Yeah,
you know?
So
I kept that.
And of course, you were away in a normal way that you would be away. There was nothing unusual about it.
It was,
and to come back and have your life turned upside down.
Her mum and her sister were in the hospital. They'd gone there with her. So they were around. The last person she spoke to was her sister. Mm. You know, it was all positive.
And
she didn't know she was going to die.
Wow.
Which in a way I think is probably good because if she'd known, she'd have worried so much about the kids and stuff like that. So I have to take some comfort from the fact that she knew nothing about it. But it was tough.
Of course. It's just awful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. We can talk about creation and we can spin what we like, but the root of it all is this fucking shit thing.
Yeah, and it was.
And it is. It was and it is.
Yeah.
And that's just, I think it's so hard, but it's so important to not throw either of them away.
Yes.
To keep the creation, but keep the fucking sadness because... Yeah. They are intrinsically linked.
And I'm at a point now, I'll be sitting watching the telly one evening and you suddenly feel, oh God, I'm having one of those funny little moments. And I can go, right, okay, switch it on. Mm. And I can sit there and then the tears can run down my face and I can go, oh, I needed that.
Yeah.
Dry the eyes and go back to watching whatever it was I was watching, you know, yeah. and just go, okay, we're fine again now. But you, I think if you can make your peace with your emotions and then say, I think I need a little cry.
Yeah.
Switch it on, have a little cry, and then go, right, okay, now I'm back to functioning. You know, I've found that useful, you know,
yeah,
the fact that I can,
God.
That I'm now in control of it. It's not in control of me, you know, I can go, yes, I can, I am feeling sad. I can choose this moment. I need to.
You have to let all of it out.
Yeah.
The ugly stuff as well yeah. as the, because it's really not, I think it's nice when you're having a day when you're like, yeah, you know, it's one
I'm
of
in
these
charge.
Things.
I can cope. Look at me go. Look at me being so grown up.
People die, don't they? And you're like, I'm very zen about it today. And then the next day you like snot down your face and you just like yeah. can't stop making that honking noise, which isn't crying.
God, the uncontrollable cry when you're literally making that noise.
It used to make me laugh. So, yeah. I'd hear that noise and think, who's that?
And afterwards, you've done yeah. it. And then you look back at what you've just done and go, oh my God, that was so weird. that one, there's that one where you make that kind of weird,
yeah,
that
yeah.
one noise, yeah. that long noise, where it's not even crying anymore. It's just yeah, a sort of weird like, wail.
Like a proper moan. Like yeah. you'd think like a harpy is
It's like
nearby.
Something out of some bloody horror movie. There's yeah. this weird, if you hear that, what is that?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just these weird sounds that come out of you because you're not in control of them.
Yeah. But were you at the birth of your children? Did you
Oh, God, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't until I had a child and I was making these sounds and I was like, oh yeah, like we said, life and death, these moments,
they're so primal
and the pain. And I remember making a sound and Ben was like, I'd never heard a human make that sound before, but it was the sound of a woman being like, baby is coming.
Yeah.
Like, and that yeah. sound
she
when
was
you...
like that on the with number one, you know, yeah. she made a few of those noises. With Ben, it was extraordinary. Neither child did she have anything. With Lily, she had gas and air, and that was it.
Wow.
With Ben, she had nothing.
Wow.
She just did self-hypnosis. She wow. did that thing of just going, and I remember the midwife saying to her at the second one, have you done the hypnosis? She's like, mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah. Really. And he was a water birth as well, so that
wow.
was quite cool. So, but it was one of those things, I remember, as a father, as a husband, as a sitting there going, fucking hell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're a warrior.
Yeah.
This is the coolest thing I've yeah. ever seen in my life, you know. And it was amazing.
And the flip side of that moan we're talking about is that pain comes because you loved her.
Oh, yeah.
That's what that pain is like, ah, I loved her. Like,
yeah.
And I.
Why aren't you still here?
Yeah.
Why have you been taken away?
And when you use the phrase like heartbroken, like we mean heartbroken, don't you?
I don't think you can even put it into words until it happens. And I mean, and the different feeling with mum and dad and with Joy, because, and I can imagine with a child, it must be just awful. But
yeah.
I mean, when mum and dad died, I was young. I was 28 when dad died and I was 31 when mum died. So I was, I thought I was young. I was youngish, but.
Yeah, you're in the right places, though, yeah.
But it was kind of. It was still supposed to be them.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the
although
right
they
order.
Were young, they had neither reached 70, but it was kind of like, okay, this is shit, but it is the right order. I was upset. I cried. I got over it.
Yeah.
And it was fine. And you have those moments of missing whatever, but it was still, it was sort of at the early end of being the right time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was kind of, okay. And then when someone who you've chosen to be with, it hasn't biology that's thrown you at them. And I mean, I love my parents. I love my parents deeply, but there's a different love you have for someone you've chosen and who was, rather annoyingly, an absolute soulmate. You know, I mean, we're one of those sickening couples that just, you know, it just worked. You've chosen that person and that goes, God, it's corny. It's literally like a part of you has been ripped out and taken away. And that was the thing. And that's where those primal noises come from. And it was, you know, pile of steaming horseshit, isn't it? But
I think that hole is that's. I mean, that I can identify with that definitely. Like feeling like I felt like my stomach was missing or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I was like, there's a hole here.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Where's
that?
Like
and there was somebody I saw one of these things. It was either online or a friend. I can't remember what it was. Who talked about it? It's not like that goes away or gets filled in.
No.
Everything else grows around it,
yeah.
it. You've seen the same. There's a thing, that diagram, if you like, of what it does. And it's true. It becomes. You absorb it. It becomes a part of who you are. And the grief now has become this little chap that sits on my shoulder and every now and then says, hey, remember me. Can I have a bit of attention?
Yeah, yeah.
And you go, oh, yeah, okay, right. Howl for a bit.
Yeah.
And you go, can you get back in your box now so I can get on with my day?
Yeah.
And you can. But it's, you know, it's this constant thing. But you grow accustomed to that
definitely.
Feeling.
Well, she sounds like an amazing, amazing lady.
I was very lucky.
Yeah.
I was very, very lucky, man. And I mean, I you know, we had 19 years. I mean, God, so many people don't get 19 years.
I know. You know,
I'd have liked another 19. I'm quite greedy, but I didn't get them. But to have had that.
Yeah.
I'm the luckiest man in the world, you know. And exactly. And I've got those memories and nobody can take those away from me.
No.
And yeah, she was extraordinary.
So. Oh, I think your kids are really lucky they've got you.
Oh, bless you. Well, I hope they think that. They won't think it when they're teenagers, but
maybe
they'll come back round to it when they're older.
100% I guarantee you won't, but trust me, hit 21, you'll get some thank yous.
Oh, bless
right.
them.
Thank yeah. you for talking to me about your wife, Joy.
Thank you for having me.
You can follow Gary on Twitter at Gary Scribbler, where you can see all of his heartbreakingly beautiful drawings. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, or you can email us, thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble, and the show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone.
We're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.